Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us again on our live broadcast, or if you're joining us on a recorded session, either here on Facebook, on YouTube, or on our podcast, we welcome you as well. But for those of you who join us live, of course, you can interact. And we are kicking off a brand new topic for this month of October, and we're going to talk about communication, especially where children who struggle with communication, and how do we help them as parents in different ways. And so this week I've got two interviews, and we're going to be talking about AAC, but different approaches to that. And specifically tonight, we're going to be talking about practical ways for helping students who are nonverbal learners. And our special guest is Rosemary Gallagher. Welcome, Rosemary. We're so glad.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yes. And so Rosemary, I found her for this interview because she has a blog called Adapting Creatively with a lot of really great suggestions for parents. And I know you said your favorite thing to talk about is some just practical ways for parents to really get in and help their child communicate better. So that's what we're going to focus on tonight. So thank you just for joining us for sharing your wisdom that you have gathered over these years. And I'd like to kick off this this time that we have together so our viewers can get to know you a little bit. Okay. And just why are you passionate about this personally, professionally? Give us a little background on you and your family. And so we can start from there.
Okay. Thank you. Well, again, privileged to be able to join you this evening and your audience, and I hope that people come away with some helpful tips and suggestions that can make their teaching easier and just life in general.
Yes.
So I began teaching as a special ed teacher, dealing mostly with kids who have learning disabilities, and when our own daughter was born, she was diagnosed with Rett syndrome, which for those who don't know, and we had never heard of it before, it's a rather severe disability that impacts neurology and bones, and it used to be classified under the autism spectrum and has since kind of been moved aside because it's more physically involved, I think, than we tend to think of with autism. So lack of speech is part of the Rett syndrome package for most kids who have it. And so I figured with my background in special ed and this need here to learn how to communicate with a nonverbal child, I was able to really pour myself into the education the needs that she would have. And I had some kind of nice contacts because of my teaching and knew the system. And so that's kind of where my passion started. And then getting involved with other families who shared those same needs was very inspiring. They're, you know, these genetic disabilities are, they're fair. They hit across all different types
of
people.
Right, exactly.
And
you don't get out of it.
And so I have met some just really wonderful families that I would otherwise not have had a chance to meet. And so my heart goes out to their kids, and but also to teachers and therapists who are expected to work with kids unlike any that they've ever dealt with before. And so here we're very caring professionals who had no idea what to do. So I thought, well, you know, if I can help bridge things for these families who are seeking help and people who really do want to be able to help, that would kind of be my passion. And I got quite involved with the Northwest Augmentative Communication Society, which is a group here in the Pacific Northwest where I live, who work mostly with teachers and therapists to help them with AAC needs. And that has been just a really great affiliation. Mm-hmm. The group is very active, so anyone in the Pacific Northwest who would care to get involved, that's NWACS is what you would, NWACS is what you would look up online. I didn't put that on my resource list, but it's really a great group. I've moved far enough away that I'm not able to participate with them anymore, mm-hmm. but they, I think something that really impressed me with them was all these wonderful therapists and teachers who had such a heart to help our kids, even though they don't have children like that of their own, but they it just really blessed me that they were so intent on trying to help. Just seeing hearts of gold, it really lifted my spirit at a time when I needed that. So,
right. And
so that's where I'm catching up from.
That's great. Yes. I mean, I think we're more passionate when it's personal and then just professional. We had a comment that we're having some video quality issues. Nina, is that on both of us or just on one side that you're having video issues? I like to resolve that as much as we can. So see if we can maybe switch the screens around. I'm not sure if that's going to help any, but we will try to do our best. You know, it was pretty good quality when we were talking earlier. So hopefully that will pick up. But So you're in the Pacific Northwest, and so you have a child that struggles with communication. So, mm-hmm. but some background in special ed that kind of gave you that extra boost. And as I read different articles in your blog, you know, bringing community together, sharing ideas, kind of pointing people to resources is a lot of the content that you have on there, and it's really good. She said it's looking better. Okay, awesome. So we will just hope and pray that it will continue to get better, because there's really not much we can do on our end. So thank you, Nina, for getting back to us on that. But let's dive into this subject about, what does AAC stand for? I think is a good
question. Okay.
To start with, because maybe some of our viewers don't know.
Yes. Well, AAC is Augmentative and Alternative Communication, and it's intended to support children who are nonverbal, and it can be a whole variety of things, from very low-tech things like symbol cards that kids can point to or eye gaze to, through voice output switches. And I have samples of all these things. So is this a time for me to kind of show those things? Okay, so an example of low tech might be choice cards such as these. There are programs I highly recommend if your child needs to use eye gaze or is a non-reader, or actually even readers who can benefit from pictures because they're so quick to identify. They don't have to stop and read the words. If you are using them, I do also recommend, even for children who you don't know whether or not they have the capacity to read in the future, always putting labels on the cards, because we never want to underestimate where kids can go. They will only rise to the opportunities that we give them. So we need to give them lots of opportunities to be reading all the time. So this would be an example of a low-tech solution for a nonverbal child.
And so it's basically a picture of the sign language sign with the word above it.
Oh, these are both. I'm sorry. Those are both sign language signs. Because some of the more abstract signs are really hard to figure out how you might show in pictures. Here are some examples, and these don't have words for the reason they don't have words on them. But one is of a plane, and one is of a map, and these are just examples of noun types of symbols. So pretty much there are thousands and thousands of symbol pictures that are available, and some you can get free online. And if money is an issue, then by all means, I do recommend that you would go ahead and download symbols to use with a nonverbal child. There is also a program that's fairly expensive, Word Maker from Mayor Johnson, but it's so quick to use. And I know that when we're homeschooling, time is of the essence. And so that's a case where while free is great, paid sometimes might be a better use of our time because it's so easy to use. So those are the symbols that you saw were examples of the Word Maker. Middle level sort of AAC device would be a voice activated switch where I can record my voice here. Welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. And then
welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations.
So it just spits back. So that's a mid-level. It's around $100, and there's a surprising amount of things that you can do with such a thing. Like a child sitting on the floor who needs to call for your attention, you could program it to say, "Mom, I need to talk to you." Or our daughter was very motivated by reading books, and so her first thing that we programmed for her on there was turn the page, please. And boy, she loved to slap that thing.
Well, then she can interact with that process and
yes,
kind of just being an observer, and
right,
so it allows that participation in to be part of, instead of just kind of sitting on the outside and expecting that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think one thing, you know, we haven't talked about the kinds of kids who might be nonverbal, but many of them are impaired in other ways as well. And it's really hard for them to have control over their world. And so when we give them any kind of communication that gives them some control they might not otherwise have. So
yes,
being able to boss people around in control. Here's another example of kind of a middle range. This is really old, so
okay,
I apologize. Take this out so it's a little easier to see. Our daughter was working with a service dog, and so we have the commands that she can give him. And it's similar to that big blue button, but each cell can be programmed separately.
Oh, okay.
There are more modern versions of this type of device that are available, and you're looking at some expense there, but again, it gives control, and schools can will provide them, and I know some people may be using some school services, so might have access that way. Medicaid used to fund such things, and I don't know that they do currently, but there may be funding. Some of the local chapters of AAC support groups will sometimes help families. And there are lending libraries, which you and I had talked about, in different regions. And the speech therapist can help get you connected with some of those resources.
Oh, to know.
Fund such things. From there, we move up to high-tech devices. And this is an example of a dedicated computer. Which is really reflecting in the light. I apologize. This one is, see the little circles on the bottom? Those are a camera. And this particular one, you can touch the buttons or you can dwell your eye gaze at them, and it will count down, and whatever you've stared at long enough, it will activate that button. There are multiple companies that have those, fewer and fewer all the time as they merge together. But that would be an example of a high-tech device. And depending on whether or not you need eye gaze control or not, they run between about $8,000 and $15,000.
Wow.
So thankfully, as medical devices, the insurance companies will fund those sorts of things for to have needs. So there's that whole range. Mm-hmm. The kids who are dealing with, we're still having some.
Yeah, but audio is still choppy, and I'm having a hard time hearing you as well. So I'm wondering.
Oh, do I need to move my microphone?
Possibly. It may just be your connection, too. But if you want to try that might be a good solution.
The camera's being stopped. Okay. Okay, we'll see if that's a little better, hopefully.
Yeah, that does sound a little better.
Okay.
Everybody's feedback, but yes, I can hear it better. Okay. But so talking about low tech, high tech, different types of devices, but really allowing a child or an individual, it's because adults use these too, to be able to articulate certain ways that they want to communicate or that they would interact into a conversation or something that they're doing. And like the button that you used was a changeable thing. So, so that's something that it wouldn't be just programmed for one thing, but you could change it based on whatever your circumstance was.
Right. Let's see. It's October, end of October is Halloween, and some families go trick or treating. So you could program, trick or treat, or just as you can really program it on the fly. That 8-button device also is really quick to change on the fly. And some kids who are nonverbal have excellent hand use and can manage very small buttons. Mm-hmm. And others, like my daughter, has no hand use whatsoever. So everything has to be eye gaze for her. And as we're talking, I'll be explaining things from that almost worst case scenario, which I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sound like that's a judgment on her, but or anyone else who has those severe disabilities. But if a kid can function with these techniques using just their eyes, for a child who can draw with a pencil or write or point, it will be even easier to access those methods.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But it is nice to have that option when they don't have that control, that is still they can use the eye gaze, which you were talking about. And if the audio is choppy, I think you had said that it counts for a certain amount of seconds that the eye stays on a certain icon and then allows that to be chosen. So
yes, and that's fully customizable for the user. So.
Awesome.
Or they can be operated by little switches or head switches or
I've seen that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really takes a team of therapists to help decide, what is the best access method and it can be done. There's really no child or adult outside the realm of help.
and it is nice when to have those lending type libraries, because this is truly an investment, especially on the upper end where you're going with the more high tech solutions. And I think we had talked earlier about, sometimes insurance will help or Medicaid, but not always. And so some weighty decisions to make. We dove into that a little bit. If you do have questions, hopefully our audio is now being able to be heard. So we'd love to have you to be able to tell us what your questions are so we can interact and get those answered. But we're going to dive into just about what benefits AAC use has, especially the doors it opens for communication for individuals.
Okay. We had talked about control. It can give a child control over a situation.
Yes.
It allows them to participate. Certainly, as we're educating our kids, we need to know what it is that they're thinking and how they're reading and whether the math that we're teaching them is computing. So they need a way to be able to express these things. Kids who are able to use pencils can answer very often, just as any of us. I mean, we all use alternative modes of communication. We don't only rely on our voice. And so for kids who aren't able to use a conventional pencil, we almost have to translate what they're trying to tell us into some form of AAC communication.
Do you want me to pull up the Bill of Rights? Or I know you have
sure.
So this is one.
This is a doc. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say at the end of the broadcast, I'm going to share with you a download sheet that Rosemary shared with me. And so it has a lot of different links on there. And this is one of them that you have on there, is this Communication Bill of Rights.
This document was put together by the National Joint Committee. I'm not sure who they are, but they're a national committee. And it explains what everyone has the right to be able to do. For example, we all have the right to have our feelings understood, or to be able to ask questions or make comments or gain information. There are some things on there that it doesn't list that I think are really important for our kids to be able to be successful as AAC users. And the biggest one is trust. That we have trust that what they mean what they are saying, and that we don't start just doubting or testing them. Where if a child says, for example, you offer them a variety of cereals and they choose granola, and then you don't say, no, you don't like granola, why would you pick granola? That's pretty demeaning. And so what we would do instead is offer them just a little bit of granola, and when they turn their nose up, acknowledge that, oh, well, maybe that wasn't really what you wanted, but I heard what I understood you to say, but let's try that again. And so it's not an error.
You follow through with what mm-hmm. and you don't mm-hmm. say, well, I'm going to choose for you, even though this is what you said. Because right. we, as a verbal speaking person, can make choices that we shouldn't make also.
Yes.
And we don't want somebody coming back and saying, well, that's not really what you really, really said or really meant. So I can see that.
Yes. Well, many times, for whatever reason, the nonverbal population, it's like people don't believe what they have said, and they ask them to repeat it, which is not how verbal speakers are treated. And I think that, again, people who are nonverbal deserve to be believed. And if they say something, we don't ask them over and over and over again to repeat it. It's very tiring, and it's just disrespectful. So mm-hmm. I wish that the Communication Bill of Rights would address those issues as well.
Definitely. We have a comment.
It's a good document, and a good one. Oh, Donna!
So Donna says, I think it's very common for parents to lead, even when we don't know. We're motivated to learn. Yeah, we do. We want to put the words in their mouths, don't we? And
yes.
This is what you really meant. But
right.
But there is, learning happens through consequences too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have to allow children to make those choices and do that. So Donna says hi.
Yeah. Yes, we go back a long ways.
So we have a question from another viewer. She says, I've had a very difficult time finding therapists and educators that are proficient with AAC. Many times I feel like I'm leading the way and I don't know what I'm doing. Is this common?
Unfortunately, it is very common. And I'm sorry that you're having that experience. If it's possible to find an augmentative communication support group in your area, and sometimes you have to go a distance, or You can also, if you would like to, you can get in touch with me through my blog. That's probably the easiest way. There's contact information there. And I can try to connect you with some group in your area, because sometimes those people have inns in schools, or they sometimes they have resources that are just kind of hard to dig up on our own.
Right.
And do feel free to get in touch.
Some schools sometimes get a grant, or they're testing for a specific developer. And if you can get the ends on those types of things, I know just coming from a medical device background that those are the types of ways that they start trying out new things. And that might be a way to at least find that out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely. We'll be sharing Rosemary's contact information at the end, so you can definitely get a hold of her to connect with a more local resource. So also we have another comment from Nina. She says, we have a state agency, Children's Rehabilitation Services here, that had been wonderful. It's difficult to find therapists that are proficient. We use LAMP, Words for Life, and they offer lots of training, but others aren't always open to learning.
Right.
So,
and the LAMP Words for Life, I love, but I think kids connect to it very quickly. I think a lot of adults are intimidated by it.
Because I'm not familiar with it at all.
It's a vocabulary retrieval system that's kind of based on ideas rather than letters or dividing things into categories and sifting through files. We would like to move our daughter back to that system because it's so open-ended. There's really no limit to the amount of vocabulary you can access through very few hits. So I'm a huge proponent, but I know that unless the company that has developed the machines that go with it, unless they're well known in your area, it is hard to get therapists who are at all familiar with it. Your rep for Kidomic can perhaps help you. I don't know. They usually know local resources, and you should have a rep in your state that can help with that, I would hope.
Yeah, Nina followed up and said that Medicaid did pay for our EAC device. It did take a whole year prior to that instant app on iPad, which I think, you know, we were talking about that earlier. That's kind of the in-between ground when you've got an iPad. I know a lot of parents that have talked about using iPads, and it's just easy to download an app, but it's not always the most researched method and a device that, I guess, was designed as an educational.
Well, and you have to have physical access with an iPad. You need to be able to touch.
So the link to the Communication Bill of Rights is on the handout that we'll give you a link to later that Rosemary shared with us. So that's one thing that you can definitely access. So let me see what my questions are here. So we're going to talk specifically about learning and practical ways to integrate AAC into learning. I think that's where we get stumped as parents is that, and Nina said that it was the LAMP app that she was using.
Okay. Oh, on the iPad you were using that?
Yeah, I think she said that.
Okay.
So excellent.
Good.
Instructing. How do we cross? I mean, we know that we can have our children use it to communicate, but how do we bridge now that gap of teaching? Types of devices, and since most of us aren't teachers, some people were trained as special ed teachers. I know quite a few that just happened to follow that, and then they ended up with a child, and now they're homeschooling, and it's wonderful. But a lot of us, like me, come in with a physics degree and go, how do I even teach this child, let alone work with all these intricacies that people are trained for a long time on how to deal with. So,
yeah.
Hey,
well, I think, let's see, I'll just... As parents working with our nonverbal kids, that relationship that we have with them is so important. And any learning that's going to happen is built up off of that relationship. And so we talked about the trust thing. And I think parents perhaps have a little easier time than a professional who doesn't live with your child. You know when your kid is pulling the wool over your own eyes, even if they don't make a sound,
right.
You know, the twinkle in the eye.
Mm-hmm. So
that relationship is just terribly important. And also, I know our kids read us really, really well. And so when we get frustrated or impatient, they're very cued into that. And so we need to really remember that relationship is so important, and that's sort of where all the learning starts. So we have to have that respect and the patience and that trust in our kids, and that's really where it all begins. And then as far as our kids, many of them are dealing with multiple issues, whether they're physical issues or emotional or behavioral issues, and so we need to be respectful of their state of body and mind and emotion before we worry about teaching something. So my daughter's prone to seizures. So if I can tell she's in a seizure state, then we just back off and approach it another time. Or if I loved him, my little guy with autism that I got to work with in the public school 1 year, would have these horrible emotional outbursts. And that was not the time to teach. So we need to remember that with our kids.
Right. Yeah. And I suppose some of these devices cause, they make you sit in a specific way. And it can be very uncomfortable after a certain amount of time. I didn't even think about that till you started talking about, body position and comfort and just that the fatigue of being able to do that for a long period of time and being considerate of the need for breaks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is definitely very true. And some of the methods that we use, like eye gaze, is surprisingly fatiguing. And if you try it yourself, takes kids a lot of practice to build up the eye strength to do the eye gaze, or there are also little reflective dots sometimes that people will wear, and then you have your pointing with your neck and your head, and those are very exhausting. And cognitively, they are very draining. So when we are teaching our kids, we want to I don't want this point to get lost in the whole kind of basic principles, because this is such an important point. Our kids need to be stressed in only one area at a time. So if the content is difficult, we need to make access really easy.
Okay. Yes.
If the content is easy, something they're proficient at, then we can start increasing difficulty of the communication. But this, we need to always be watching that balance.
How that is a huge pitfall, because we think, now they can communicate, we can push ahead, and yet they're still getting used to this new way of communicating.
Right. And very often people think that, now my kid is on a high-tech device, that's how they're going to do all their schoolwork now, and it's going to be such a cure-all for everything. But surprisingly enough, dropping back to the very lowest of low tech is often the best match for something that's really difficult. Like if they're struggling to read, or they're doing complex math or content area that really takes a lot of brain power, they don't have extra brain power left to be able to figure out where things are on a device, and we need to simplify how it is that they're communicating with us. So we have to really weigh those things out. I know with my own daughter, as advanced as she's through high school now and everything, low tech really was how we handled all of her educational things. But there are ways that you can dress them up to make them very demanding, and I'll be showing those later. You can make multiple choice really hard. So it's applies to all ability levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donna made the comment. She said, my daughter has an eye gaze device, Rett syndrome, but I don't really do academics on it. I keep it for chatting so she can tell me this is hard or this is too easy or boring. Excellent. I use low tech for academics, except if she's reading.
So excellent. Yeah, that's very sensitive and thoughtful of a way to address that.
So. Yeah, that never even occurred to me that should be something to be considered, but it makes a lot of sense that, you know, you're stretching in so many directions, and it makes the fatigue happen even quicker. And for a child that maybe just is intaking information, and you're just teaching and allowing the information to go in, there doesn't have to be a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about the low tech, the mid tech, and the high tech. I think one of the advantages of the high tech is that it allows kids to initiate their own topics, which is fabulous. But many times in teaching, we're dealing with a fairly confined content, and so they don't need that ability to. Hey, by the way, last weekend, I was really mad when they don't need the ability to do that when we're trying to focus on learning a book or a math skill or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I could take that away from my daughter while we're doing math. She wants to focus on some of those things instead. It's when you're instructing, and there isn't really a lot of back and forth with the student. But when you start to get to the point where you're testing their knowledge, or then the communication is more important, if they're understanding how you're communicating.
So it's important that so we are defining in our mind what the goal of this session is, and putting the stressors where they need to be, whether they're on the content or whether they're on the expression of that content. And like I said, low tech is very often the easy way to go. And we really need to know what our kids connect with. Some of our kids are reading and they can handle text. Others aren't reading yet and they may need symbol support. Some kids need large font size or black and white pictures only, or photographs only, or in our case, photographs are a distraction. So the symbols work better because they're immediately recognized and we can move on quickly. So
I guess that would be a reason why you wouldn't want to just go full bore with one method before you try it out, you know, whether pictures, non-pictures, you know, all of those things work. And color or not, and then kind of move in that direction once you've kind of figured that out about your student.
And sometimes a speech therapist can be helpful in exploring those areas, but I think just observing our kids is probably
right. They're
useful.
They're usually quite comfortable in telling you as their parent whether they like something or not.
So we're going to keeping them simple. It is helpful. And then as teachers that we are when we're homeschooling, we want to keep things simple for ourselves as well. And so we want to have things that work for us too. And I know a lot of us, whether you're dealing with kids that are very busy and they're going to be throwing things, or whether we're having to worry about positioning and getting things all worked around so that they can see, we need to simplify things for ourselves. We easily fall into this octopus mom syndrome where we're pulling cards and books. And so things that can help with that, I have some samples of that. Let's see. So here we have, this is just a piece of indoor-outdoor carpet. It was just a scrap. And for kids who drool, you want to have some sort of protective covering on. Oh, yeah. They're going to be reused, or kids who like to rip things. Mm-hmm. I used to laminate a lot.
Mm.
And that is very expensive and very time-consuming. So these are just little name card or name badge holders, and
right. You just slip them out. Okay.
Sorry, what was that?
You gave a link to how to find those on Amazon. Yeah. Name badges, yes. That are clear, so you can just put the picture right
aside. So that's a quick solution, and it's simple. For kids who might need those sorts of physical support,
ability. Square and a little bit of Velcro and name badges and pictures or words.
Yes. Here we have cardboard strip and
clothespins and
clothespins, and you can just. That one wasn't very good. There we go. So. Like that. And a kid who can point is at a real advantage because they might actually even be able to touch it. A child who can't, you might want to space things out so you can see where they're looking.
Okay. Yes. Pointing or looking as a mode for communication.
Yes. This is a board that has some poster board on it. So this is the gluey side of a post-it. And I love this stuff. It's kind of expensive, so if you cut it up into strips, then you can get more out of it. But just any paper, it doesn't have to be covered. Foam also sticks to it. I have some numbers here, so I'm going to show you how we can use these in math. The foam sticks to it. The name tags or name badges to it. So it's just kind of a really nice little
Is that thing. That same one that you have on the handout, or is that different, the one that is? Okay. So there'll be a link to that on the handout that we're going to share as well.
All these are great because then you're not having to hold things. You can hold one thing, and if the child throws it, you don't lose their progress. Or if you drop it because you're busy repositioning, you don't lose it. This is another Amazon thing. It's just a sentence strip holder. Again, so it holds things for you when you just slide them
in. There.
Yeah,
yes.
Pocket part. Magnets. This is a magnetic board. I put a paper on it so that it was just a little more flexible. But things that are magnetic. And then my two favorites: little whiteboards where I can write the words in the corner, because my daughter does read, so I can just write in the corners. The link that I gave you is to one that's made out of melamine, so it's very durable. There are ones that cost just as much. They're made out of cardboard, and they don't last at all. And then for kids who need things separated out, you can laminate index cards, and then those can be held. I'm close. Those can be held.
Right.
So you can see.
Yeah, it's just something
that's kind of eliminated. So those are some simple things. And, when your child, I don't know, different states have different requirements for evaluations.
Yes.
Washington is very, very open about theirs. But when they've indicated an answer, you can just staple it to the paper you're reading the question from, for example, or glue stick is pretty fast, but you can take those disposable answers and just apply them right to the sheet, and then hopefully that satisfies the evaluation requirement where you are. But
definitely. That's, you know, those are some great hands-on ways that we can kind of start thinking in this direction, because I think sometimes we can get overwhelmed. Well, what do we do with all of those little cards and the pictures? Mm-hmm. And yes, you need a place to organize them, and you're not going to use them all at the same time.
Right.
The ones that you are applicable to that specific scenario that you're doing. Mm-hmm. We had a question from a guest that asked, do you use a curriculum?
No. And that's one of the reasons I didn't go back to teaching, is because I like to write my own. I know there was a question about reading curriculum in here at one point early on. I saw that. Yeah.
Is there a curriculum
for reading? And I, my daughter did use on now. It was a very phonics-based program, and we were worried that she wouldn't, being nonverbal, we didn't know if she really heard the sounds the same way we did or anything. The strategy that they used to teach connecting the letters was this underline thing with their hands, the teacher would stand there. And we saw our daughters doing that with her eyes when she was sounding the words out. So that phonics method worked for her. I'm
so
very
kind
much
of like a direct instruction method, teach your child to read in 100 easy mm-hmm. lessons, kind of like that. But yet she used her eyes instead.
So we knew she was hearing those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much a whole language person. And then my background is in curriculum development, so it was a delight for me to be able to design my own. So no, I didn't have a curriculum. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it does make it difficult, but I think a lot of times there are a lot of things within curriculums that you can adapt with these different
Yeah, I know. I see where you told me an hour would go fast.
And I know there's a question I want to get to,
okay.
And it's about two choices. And does two choices not equal a 50-50 chance? And so you wrote a blog article on this, and I think in our methodology thinking, if a child has only a yes and a no, am I really just giving them a 50-50 chance of getting it right and testing their understanding? Because a lot of times we're going to be using these devices to test, not instruct, because the input's going in. We just need them to communicate out. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, if your child were an inanimate object like a coin, then the 50-50 rule would apply. But we're talking about bright, breathing, willful creatures who have their minds of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you ask your child to, for example, to categorize things, say maybe it's words that start with M or words that don't start with M. And so you have, or here, actually, I'll use this as an example because that's what I set it up for. Okay, we've got the plane. This is why I didn't have. The plane has the long A sound and the map has the short A sound. So then we have our words. They have to tell us whether the word fits in the plain category or the map category, right? Okay, so
okay.
simple activity. Categorizing is really a wonderful instructional method because it's so simple and it can be applied to every subject that I can think of. So as they go through, if they get all of these correct, Okay. The likelihood of it being guessing is so small.
Right.
And it goes down with the more opportunities that they have, obviously, then the less chance it is that they're actually guessing. Not that you want to give them 100 questions and drill them to death. But today, if they get 5 out of 5 right, we celebrate. And then maybe tomorrow they'll get 4 out of 5 right. And then in a week or two, we try again, and they're still getting 4 out of 5 right. You can pretty much just relax in the knowledge that they know what they're doing.
And it's, right.
If it's coming out random, it would be 50-50. And that probably means that they are guessing.
Yes.
So that's the bucket that I worry about, is if it's 50-50. Either they're not feeling good, or they really don't understand, or I'm not teaching it right. If they're consistently...
All those variables can be involved in that.
Yes. Now, if they're consistently missing, then that also becomes clear, and that's a very good thing for us to explore. Are they bored, and so they're teasing us and getting it wrong on purpose, or have they misunderstood and they're applying what we taught them backwards, or you know, in a way that they're truly not understanding it? But we need to diagnose what's going on. And on the blog post, there's a little calculator where you can figure out what percent of probability it is. It's a surprisingly small number, actually, that it takes to demonstrate that guessing is not occurring. So if our kids, and also the more things they have to choose from, the less likely it is that the score is a guess. So when I'm giving, for example, a spelling test. Okay, so here we have to get all these other ones out of here. Get these off. Okay, so if I asked you to spell the word a lot, and we have it spelled 3 different ways, and then here's the word mustache.
Okay.
That, if they're guessing that, then I know that they are either, they're probably teasing me. Yes, but that helps to decrease the probability of guessing by putting things like that in there. It also kind of spices it up and makes it fun, because then there's a little joke.
And I'll put it in Spanish. And
go. Well, since that relationship is the most important thing, it's good to be making it fun sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, that makes it so practical, is, you know, categorizing and allowing options. It's almost like multiple choice, but you're very distinct in your choices of what you put in front of your child for those choices. And you kind of understand what you're trying to be able to prove through the questions and how they answer them and the output that they give. So,
yeah.
So I can see how really a lot of different curriculum can be adapted in this manner if you take the time to figure out just how to categorize the answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that doesn't help us with our time if I stumble over words. When we find a system that clicks with our kid, that's a great way to teach. So that categorization, which can be applied to science, you know, are these, or agriculture, for example, my daughter's ag class, we categorized, are these beef breeds or dairy breeds? Horticulturists do this all the time.
They teach biology. You have to learn how to classify.
Yeah, but actually it's a very good system for a lot of things, and multiple choice can be very effective when you have close, especially like the spelling. If you put the misspellings up there as part of the,
they have to distinguish enough to know that it isn't just an obvious answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when, once they know what this, what is expected of them, then that is a fair way to evaluate them as well. So we wouldn't teach it by categorizing and then expect the child to write an essay. We would, right. We would test it the same way that we had instructed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That also, that saves the parent a ton of time as well. When you find out a system that works for your kid, that works for you, then that helps support that it needs to be quick and easy for everyone.
Yeah.
By applying it in.
That's the thing, is it takes a long time to figure out that system. And I think parents, when they jump into homeschooling, they want to say, okay, this is my child's diagnosis. Give me the system that's going to work. And the problem is, it's unique to your child. It's not unique to their diagnoses. And it's unique to how you best teach. And you just have to kind of try it all out. And it does take time, but it's worth the investment of that time and energy, because you will find what works.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And Donna had said, she said, my daughter consistently got answers all wrong at school. She was bored, and it was her passive protest. I had to explain to her teachers with your blog post that getting them all wrong really had to be deliberate. It's hard to get something all wrong. So she was smart, and she was trying to say, Well, Nietzsche's one of our guests, so this has been enlightening. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it feels like such a broad topic in an hour.
I know, but it really brought clarification. I mean, like I told you when we first started, this is out of my wheelhouse. And I was kind of wondering, how does this all work? But the practicality has come to light, I think, tonight. So just to be able to take these pictures, these images, we see them all over, I think, on Teachers Pay Teachers, and you know, Pinterest has them all over, but how do you use them? And you really broke it down very simply. And I know your blog does a really good job of that. I'm going to bring up that right now, just to share with our viewers. It's called Adapting Creatively, and it's adaptingcreatively.blogspot.com. And so you'll be able to find a lot of different things. If we were talking earlier, she has a lot of sewing things on there too for adaptive clothing, which, you know, is one of those things you just can't find. So so that's great, because I know our kids, they just don't want those jeans that fit tight and all those other things. And so to find ways around that. So it's not just AAC, it's a whole bunch of other stuff there too.
And down on the sidebar, there is a way to connect with me.
Oh, yes.
So it's right to my email. So.
Okay. Yep. You can follow by email. And yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is. Yeah. So I'm happy to answer questions. You'll notice the blog has sat idle for a while. Our family has been going through some very huge transitions in the last few years. So I haven't been attentive to my blog. I've had to take the last seat on the bus. But I do respond to email.
Right. Yep. And so your email is also on the sheet that I will be sharing, as well as a lot of the different examples or products that Rosemarie shared. Those links will also be on there. And so just some really good information. And also you shared a link to the blog for our guest that's coming on Friday, which is what I want to dovetail into. And what you're talking about is so good, because we're talking about we've talked about tonight, just how these different applications can be used practically. But Carol, and I'm going to say her last name correctly, Zangari with Practical AAC, she is going to share free and low cost options with us for AAC, just different different products. And she said, this is great. It's AAC month. There are so many deals out there. I am just going to give you a list. So, so be prepared. Normally we have our broadcast here on Tuesday night, but because I'm traveling and speaking at a conference in Atlanta next Tuesday and Wednesday, we are doing it Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock Central, we will be on with Carol and be sharing those, all the different content she has to share. And she just has a plethora of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I really encourage people to sit in on that one. Carol's fabulous.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, but this has been just great information.
I just
appreciate your practical hands-on application to using AAC with nonverbal students, because it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And thank you for all of you who joined us live. We do apologize for a little bit. We can never know what happens with technology. It's just the way it is. And so thank you for your patience with us with that.
Yeah.
And for just being part of this conversation. And we keep the conversation going all week long. If you want to join us on our support group, and are you are not a member of that group yet, just ask to join the support group for Sped Homeschool Conversations, and we will add you to that, and you can be interacting with our almost 2,000 members in that closed group. So lots of different things going on there. So, and then in 2 weeks from tonight, I will be back and I'm interviewing Dr. Erica Olympiou. And we're going to be talking about helping young adults recognize and communicate their emotions. So we're going to head into a whole different realm of communication, and we're going to talk about social emotional communication too. So that'll be exciting as well. So anyways, so thank you again, Rosemary, for joining us.
Thank you all of you.
Yeah. This has been fun. And like I said, it was going to go really fast. So, all right. Well, we'll see you all again next time. And thanks for joining us on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Night, everyone.